Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. This is Lee Cantor. I'm joined in the studio with Stone Payton, and we have a very special edition of the show today, Stone, don't we?
Yes, we do, and it's perfectly appropriate. We've just had first lunch.
Exactly. And,
so now we're going to hear from Costanzo Astorita. I probably butchered that, but we'll find out. C&M Gastronomy Group. He's here to talk about a new concept, and I've been looking forward to this, man.
I know. It's one of the top chefs, top restaurant companies in town. I'd love to hear what you're up to, Costanzo.
Now, we got a new concept, which is called Fig Jam. It's at the 1745 on Peachtree Street. It's basically a concept that was devised by myself and my partner to cater to a younger crowd. With a menu that is American with, you know, worldly influences, just like our population here in Atlanta that's become diversified.
Now, so, fig jam?
Fig jam.
So are there figs in a lot of the menu items?
There's, we have one of our cocktails is called a fig jam, and it actually has figs in it, and we do have two sauces with fig. Unfortunately, right now, this is not the season for figs, so we need to wait a little bit longer.
So how'd you come up with the concept?
That's a good question. We had basically spent about 6 months trying to figure out what to call it, and I had a sample of fig jam on my desk. And jokingly, my partner says, "Well, why don't we call it fig jam?" And I says, "No, people are going to laugh at it." And, you know, we thought about it some more, and I said, "You know, I actually like the name." And we asked, you know, our staff, people, and everybody says, "Oh, that looks like a catchy name." So out of that came Fig Jam as a joke.
As a joke. Now you're stuck with it.
That's the real deal.
Yeah.
Now, you've been in Atlanta for, at least 20 years,
yeah,
I think,
I've
right?
been here, yeah. First, I was working at Chateau Alon Winery when I first came here for about 2 years. Didn't enjoy corporate America, so I left, and basically since then been self-employed. Started with a restaurant a long time ago called Chabella, and after that, sold it after about 2 or 3 years, and then did some consulting, left the field, came back into it again in 96 with the second Chabella.
And I understand you are from a long line of chefs. Give us a little bit of a feel for that lineage.
Yeah, my father was a very well-known chef in Bermuda and in the Isle of Capri, where I was born. My great-grandfather was known in Capri for being one of the best chef. And also I have my mother's brother was also a famous chef in Capri. He used to be one of the chefs at Top Hotel there. Plus I have three cousins who are also chefs right now.
So the pressure was on, huh?
No, I fell in it by accident, actually. I wanted to be an architect. But unfortunately, my parents were going through a hardship at the time, so they couldn't send me off to school. So I decided, you know, best thing. I grew up in this business, so I said, let me, you know, dabble in it part-time. And after that, I just fell into it full-time. And since then, I've, you know, kept it going.
Now, are there more formal training opportunities now than there were when you were coming through? Because you get the sense as an uninitiated consumer, I watch on television, you got all these chef shows, and so it looks like there's a lot of opportunity to be trained as a chef. Is that the case, or is that all theater?
No, I think some of it is theater, definitely. But I think the young people have more opportunities now, besides with the CIA, Johnson & Wales, the Atlanta Institute. Also, there's chances also to go work under a great chef, like we were talking earlier. During my time, it was basically, you know, you didn't go to hotel school. You went and worked under somebody and trained that way. I think now there's a little bit more of a standard set.
But there was more more kind of collegiate or educational training rather than kitchen training.
Kitchen
with
training.
The fire and the knives and the the pans and the pots.
But you came up the old school way, apprenticed. You worked under some guy yelling at you all the time.
I actually worked under my dad for a while. I did go to culinary school.
Yeah.
I spent 4 years. Actually, I got a 4-year degree in hotel and restaurant management. After working 2 years under my dad and working under another chef in Bermuda, I decided to go, you know, get out of the kitchen because I thought, first of all, in those days, chefs weren't glorified like today. You know, they were stuck in the back, hot, you know, working long hours. I said, well, I'm going to be the manager. I'm going to sit up front, wear a nice suit. And that's how I, you know, decided to do my education. But after leaving Bermuda, I went to England and I finished my last 2 years of college and played around part-time in the kitchens and front of the house. So I got both sides of it.
Now, what's it like when you're coming up with a concept? Can you walk us through, like, do you think first of the location of the city where you want it to be, or do you think about kind of the food you want to serve?
Our first thought is always location. I mean, location has to be, you know, A-plus location. That is the first thing. Then we look around and see what's around there, what kind of diversity of food or what's missing.
Uh-huh.
Then from then we develop a plan, decor, what kind of people we are trying to attract, what hours we want to be open, and then after that it develops into menu development, sourcing out chairs, tables.
Right, the decor. The ambiance. Now, what's your favorite part of that process?
To be honest, the design stages. Uh-huh. It's usually I usually think that I'm the best, because at that time you got so many thoughts in your head and you got to, you know, take out a clear picture of what you want to do.
Right.
And it's also exciting. It's like I guess having a newborn baby. It's your baby. You want
right.
to see it grow up and run as it, you know.
But it starts as a blank sheet of paper. But then as soon as you add something, now you got to work around what you've added, and you got to kind of build on those concepts. And when you choose one thing, you're eliminating something else, maybe.
Correct. Yeah. It's also gotten very expensive now to open restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, I think our first restaurant we opened in '96. I think we opened it with $30,000. Right now, just the...
You can't do that now, can you?
No. I mean, you're looking at probably 300 to 500,000
wow.
because of everything, the new codes as far as building. All the materials have gone up, usually stainless steel. So it is quite challenging to come on the budget. So you spend a lot of time looking at different items and saying, okay, is this chair worth $300, or, you know, so
right.
can we
get away with a $200 chair?
Correct.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, so. In your world, do you visit with the chair guy, the table guy, the glass guy, the fork guy, or is there one guy that knows all the guys? And you like work through a one.
No, we work through. No, myself and my partner both, we work with everybody. We actually work with Oneida. Like Oneida, they produce all our cutlery and. China, basically, we have what is called a contract pricing. So we get a special pricing on that. Then the chairs, we go down to the mart.
Did you just get a break on the price for mentioning it on the air?
Yeah, probably.
Are we getting a piece of this, Lee? Yeah.
No. Oh, no, that's just, I mean, anybody can do that and get that. But that's how you do it. We go down to the mart a lot and look at what's happening in fashion, what's happening in design, what are the trends in the outside of Atlanta. Unfortunately, Atlanta is always lagging behind, like New York, Chicago, L.A., Boston.
We're not the trendsetter here in Atlanta? No?
I don't think so. We're catching up very fast, but I think we are always kind of a little bit behind. So we travel to New York a lot. We go to food shows in Chicago to see what's happening out there. So you got to be on the cutting edge.
Now, it seems like Atlanta has a lot of restaurants and a lot of independent restaurants. How are they perceived as a restaurant market in the other parts of the country? Do you know?
From what I hear, from what I read, is that Atlanta is in the top 10 as far as independent restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I think with all the different the way the city is created, that we have all these little sort of parts like West Side,
right?
The
little neighborhood,
yeah,
right.
So I think people are now starting to appreciate that and staying in their neighborhood. They're not all rushing to Buckhead to go out for dinner, or
right.
not, you know. So I think it's in that respect we're growing very fast.
Now Baranda, that's Midtown, right?
Correct.
And then where's Public House?
Public is in Midtown. Is on the other side of the Fox.
And Fig Jam will be.
It's in right on the cusp of Midtown and Buckhead.
So that's your spot, huh? You're gonna take over Midtown.
That's a lot of plate spin. That's a lot of operations, man.
Yeah. No, well,
you're a busy guy.
We like Midtown. It's a very affluent market. They understand food. They're very appreciative of what we do. So, you know, we ventured to, I guess, South Buckhead. It was the opportunity was right, the price was right, the location we thought was a good location. So that's the reason we moved from really Midtown. But it's right on the cusp there.
Now you're very fit and trim. Is not being fat, is that a problem? I would think your chef ought to be a little chubby, don't you think? That's not a problem in Midtown?
No. No. I try. I mean, you know, as you get older, you want to keep your weight off.
Right.
Plus,
right.
You're working, you know, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week does keep you fit.
I would weigh 400 pounds if I worked in the kitchen. Are you kidding me?
But maybe you're desensitized.
No, you'd be surprised that, you know, some of the best meal for me is going home late night and just having a bit of cheese, a glass of wine, and some bread. I mean, that's to me, is like, when you sit in a restaurant all day tasting sauces and tasting this,
right.
You kind of like, at the end of the night, last thing you want to do is sit down and eat.
And eat more, right.
Yeah.
And then do you go out to eat for pleasure? Or
oh, yes. At least once a week we do. I try and do visit all the restaurants and competition that's in Atlanta. You know, we have some great, great restaurants. So it's always good to see what they're doing and what they're achieving.
So do you ever peek out of the kitchen door and you see other chefs that you know from around town? And you go, oh, Garcon is here.
No. I'm very, very quiet. Usually I'll go if I'm assuming I'll sit down. I'll just
mind your own business.
Yeah, I'm not there to criticize them or to judge them. I'm there just to enjoy the food and
right.
being out.
But is it kind of a fraternity, the chefs around town? Do you guys hang out
yeah.
at all or talk to each other about ideas?
To be honest, myself, I don't very much. I kind of always venture out and go to travel different cities to do that.
Right.
I do have some people I talk to, but I think there is a nucleus of chefs that stick together. But I'm not in that group right now yet.
Do you want to get in? Because we can make some calls.
Yeah, we can make it happen for
no,
you.
I keep in touch with some of them. It's just that, you know, I think everybody's busy. And the problem with me is that I don't go to the chef's meeting once a month that
right.
they have here in Atlanta on Mondays.
That's the meeting I want to go to.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, there's some contacts you keep in touch, you know, and sometimes some chefs get jealous if they think you're trying to.
Right. What do you have anybody that maybe was working for you in the kitchen and then has gone on to become a chef in his own restaurant?
Yeah, we were talking earlier. Richard Blaze worked for us for about 9 months, and he's doing really good right now.
Yeah.
I think Gavin. He's actually the training chef for the new concept that opened up in Barcelona. He worked for us for a while, so we've had quite a few people that have gone on and opened up their own restaurant. You know.
Now, how do you keep a restaurant like Baranda that's been around for a while? How do you keep it fresh and keep the people coming back?
Good question. A lot of it has to do with design. I mean, every year we spend, we take a certain amount of money and put it back in the restaurant. Like 4 years ago, we redid the whole floor in the mm-hmm. restaurant. This year, we're working on redoing the patio. So we're always adding fresh. We redid our bar. Recently, we've changed our bar area to high tops to make it feel more like a bar. We late last year, we actually had the whole bar rebuilt. So we keep putting money into it and refreshing it and all that.
What about menu?
Menu, we tend to evaluate. I mean, like, our pizza are becoming less and less as the main folks. The main item on our menu, we're going more protein. We switched a lot to organic beefs. Right now we're using the Brasstown Farms organic beef and pork. So.
Do you like the shopping? Do you like to, or at least picking out
a
category of food and saying, from now on, we're going to work with Brasstown? That comes.
Yes,
to, you
yeah.
enjoy
that
part of it?
That is what I spend a lot of time sourcing out products. You know, we only use domestic fish as much as we can. I don't like to use any imported stuff from China and that part. So all our calamari is domestic, our shrimp are domestic. So I try and keep as much, you know, in mind for the customer that when they come to us, they're guaranteed they're going to get, as a U.S. product as opposed to an imported product.
What about a Georgia? Are you trying to get locally grown, locally sourced?
I'm trying to source some local tomatoes coming up for the season, and I'm trying to find a local lamb, which I haven't had a lot of luck finding yet. I found it in North Carolina, South Carolina, but I haven't found anybody in Georgia that produces lambs yet.
Of the quality that you like?
Yes, yeah. So we try and find, like, our tomatoes come from Kentucky. They're grown in a hothouse, but they're, you know, the ugly tomatoes grown there. They come, you know, every week they get sent to us.
Aren't those the best? The uglier they are, the better
they
taste.
Yeah.
I've learned that. So do you ever have people come into the restaurant and they want to talk to the chef? And if so, does that annoy you, or are you glad to talk if you can?
Oh, no. Love to talk to customers.
You enjoy
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Because actually, you get a lot of feedback. You know, you can tell by the reaction. One thing is nice is, especially at Fig Jam, we have an open kitchen plan. And you sit there and you see when somebody's enjoying food because you go, oh, this is really good. Or you can see that, you know, their face, they're enjoying it. And actually, I think that's more satisfaction than sometimes than money for me.
Yeah, that is to get that direct feedback. Because a lot of times you never know what they think. You know, they're coming and going.
Yeah. And a lot of people tend to, sometimes they will say, oh, it was okay. You know, it was good. But when you get that, you know, that they come up to you, especially when they're an open kitchen, say, oh, we love that dish, you know, and it's, you know, it doesn't matter what it is so much gratifying for us than it is, you know, than sometimes money.
Right.
So I'm fascinated to learn that it really, a big part of it, though, is the atmosphere. What's on the walls, music, if any, the floors, the furnishings. This plays a big part in the whole experience, doesn't it?
Unfortunately, yes. The old adage where, you know, you go to this little mom-and-pop restaurant where it was, you know, broken down tables, nothing matched, has gone by the wayside.
You like know, my house.
You know, people are, you know, more and more, if you see more and more people are spending a lot in decor, the feel, and the food is sometimes taking second place. You know, but for me, I always look for the restaurant that has the good food. I'm not really worried about the decor. I go to a restaurant to dine as opposed to be seen or see, you know.
Now, you had your two restaurants for a while. Now, you just opened Fig Jam. Mm. What made you decide to have a third restaurant? And then are you looking now to have a fourth? Are you looking, if there a real estate opportunity popped up in an area, would you be inclined to maybe pursue that?
Definitely. I mean, we're always looking. Right now we're at a stage of three restaurants where you're not small and you're not big. You're
right you're in between.
In between. So you're kind of between a hard place and a rock. Definitely our next concept, we're looking at doing a market, a kind of an Etsy style market.
Oh, I am all over that.
Yeah.
I want to be your first phone call when you open that up.
Yeah. I think there's a need in Midtown for a good market. And as you know, you see in the grocery stores, their section of takeout is getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And it's affecting restaurants, I think, in the long run. People can get just as good meal in a restaurant. In a grocery store. Grocery store.
Right.
And so I think if we do a market with a little, you know, side section where you can actually eat in, but most of it is take home, you know, the little bits and pieces.
So you're looking for a spot?
We have a couple in mind, but I haven't talked to the real estate, so I don't want somebody to grab it before
okay,
me.
Okay, we'll keep that.
Couldn't we lease him some space downstairs? That would be such a hero at home if I could just slide by.
He wants to be in Midtown.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah.
I could understand that. So I want to hear about the charity wine tastings and the monthly cocktail classes happening at a couple different places. But, tell us more about that.
The wine tastings, we do every month. We do on the last Thursday of the month. We select an area or a particular type of wine. I think the one coming up right now will be California wines. And basically what I do is taste the wines and then design a menu for it. The charge is $25 and 20% goes to Katie's Club. With the proceeds, which is a cancer group that helps young children. So we do it not to make money, but to have the experience of wine and food together and to help out a charity.
Oh, that's great.
So we do that, and I think the one in May should be fantastic because it's all to do with champagne, and I think we're going to do it the whole month. Every bottle or glass that we sell, we'd donate $1 to cancer research. So
now, so giving back to the community, that seems to be an important component of your business.
I do so because I think that's who supports you. I mean, that's my customer base, and give back to the community is important. I think, you know, there's a lot of causes out there that need help, and I think with the hardship that we've had in the last 2 years in the country, some of these charities are suffering as far as money.
Right. And that's a good way to give back. And then also it helps educate your customer about the wines and the food. So
no, it definitely does.
It's a win-win.
Yeah. And it's also, we sometimes choose wine that you would not normally buy because you're not familiar with them.
Right.
You know, so that people, and we have a great one coming up in April. We're doing a Scotch tasting, and we do have a master Scotch.
Right. That seems to be becoming more and more popular, like scotch tastings instead of wine tastings almost.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that?
Bourbon, especially bourbon and rye are coming. I mean, they're just exploding in sales.
Mm-hmm.
And people are appreciating now. They're starting to look for that single, you know, like a single scotch in the bourbon version of
right.
it.
Right. And they seem to be getting more and more educated.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yes. There's classes out there you can take, and there's a lot. I mean, you know, every magazine you see, there's something mentioned about it.
Right. And you have a Scotch master or a master of...
Yeah, Scotch master, he's coming in, and he dresses in a full kilt. And,
oh, wow, that's cool. I know some master Scotch drinkers.
Yeah.
I can help you with the other side of the table.
Okay, well, you're welcome to come. When we leave, I'll give you my card. If you want to come, I'll invite you down and enjoy it.
Now, how has social media impacted your business? Any are you now like involved in Facebook and building kind of Facebook pages for your restaurants? Whereas 10 years ago that you knew there was no Facebook.
Oh, definitely, all our restaurants have Facebook, have Twitter accounts. I'll be honest here, we were a little bit late getting onto the bandwagon. You know, it was something that we thought was more for younger generation, but we didn't realize how much even the older generation now are looking at Facebook or writing comments and tweeting. You know, all our bar managers tweet every day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Now, do you make them do that or you encourage them to do that?
Yeah, we encourage them. Uh-huh. Kind of make them.
And so then you want them to be kind of creating a dialogue with the customers, right?
Correct, yes. It's part of like, let's say, I always tell them, come up with a drink special. If the bar is slow tonight, tweet out there, say, hey, you know, if you come in and you mention, you know, the word fig, you'll get 50% off food, whatever,
right.
Whatever we do to entice business. Because
right.
it is the younger generation, especially in the 20s to 30s, they're very much attached to their cell phones.
Right. And then you're rewarding your best customers, so that's good too.
Yeah, we do that. We have on our Facebook, like on lunchtime, there's a food question that our morning host writes on there and sends it out. And whoever gets it correct, you know, the first to get it correct, we send them a $25 gift certificate.
Wow. And do you do any loyalty program amongst the different restaurants?
No, that is working right now. One of our managing partner, Public, he's actually working on that. It should be rolling out in about two to 3 months.
Because I would think that's a good, because now you, especially with three restaurants, you can probably pull that off now.
Yeah, we can, yeah.
So as competitive as this arena is, because we all have to make a choice come Friday and Saturday night, right? Have you decided to make a financial investment in a public relations firm? You're partnering with PR people? You're buying advertising?
No, actually, this is on January. This year was the first time. We've always done our own marketing, our own advertising. But this year we felt that we were, none of us had the time or none of us had the expertise. So we did hire Karen Canavan's PR firm to help us with PR mostly and some marketing. And they've done a great job so far. So we felt that it was rather than spend money and just print ad, is to put it towards that.
Right. And then that probably helped that on top of your social media, you're sending out a lot of messages to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. You've got to be out there constant. I mean, if your name is not out there, whether it's good or bad, you know, people forget you. I mean, especially like a restaurant like Baranda, which has been there this will be our 12th year now. You know, it's like the old lady on the block, you know. Everybody knows where she is, but they don't want to visit her, you know, so.
I don't think so. That place, it's not that easy to get into Baranda.
He's very modest.
I think so.
No, but you want to media is a social media tweet. What's the other one? Like Foursquare. I know Public is hooked up on Foursquare. So, there's so much out there. You got to pick and choose what you think suits your market.
So now, Fig Jam's the latest and the greatest. Now, what is there anything happening there upcoming?
Upcoming, right now we've got, we got a happy hour starting in April.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 45 minutes. Man, I missed the mark on that one.
No, it'll be in April. We're going to do a $2, five plates at $2 for food and then drinks. We have some drink specials and it'll be running Wednesday to Friday afternoon from 4:30 to 6:30. That is usually our quietest time and it's also, most people, when I realized, like last Friday we were talking, is traffic is so bad. Come in, have some a bite to eat, some drink, and then
right. just wait it out.
Right,
yeah. Eat it out, drink
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we want to try that and see that if
and
we can
then,
do.
And then I think Sundays you have oyster night.
Yeah, Sunday we have the oyster night.
Baby.
I know it was very successful last night. I just walked in this morning and my manager was talking to me and saying, Costanza, we got to figure out how to open them faster.
There's no machine for that?
Yes, there is. Before Kelly came and picked me up, I was actually on the internet researching
looking
that.
Looking for another machine?
Yeah, we were doing them by hand, which is great, but it takes some skill and,
right.
And it does take a little bit longer.
Well, you're from Bermuda. Don't they know how to do oysters in Bermuda?
We don't have oysters in Bermuda.
No. Oh, we don't.
No, I was... there we mostly is, you'd be surprised that even the fish that comes to Bermuda in the restaurant, most of it is imported.
It's fish really? Sticks from Gordon's.
Yeah.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about Fig Jam, Baranda, or Public Draft House, where would they go? You have a website?
Best place is our websites, yeah. So they're up to date, constantly being updated with events, calendars, menu.
Okay, so we got several. We got
Baranda, Atlanta.com. You got PublicATL.com, and now FigJamAtlanta.com.
Correct.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Well, thank you.
And best of luck. And not that I don't think you guys need it over there, but you guys are doing great. And this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton signing off another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We will see you all next time.